Boy, it is showtime. It's Tuesday night, which can only mean one thing. It means you are spending your evening with the Full Tilt Podcast Network, and we couldn't be happier for that. You can go find all of our other content, all our other shows over there at truenorthffb.com/fulltilt, or you can go over to YouTube where you can sub and you can catch the first 10 minutes bonus of our show that we like to do. Today was talking about league rivalries, why they're important, and the freedom that is being in too many leagues that can be. I, of course, am your host with no time on hands. I'm Tom Simple FF. Joining me, as always, is the newly changed handle at Jacob Sanderson. And down below, as always, is the smartest man on the planet. There is no one else that I would rather have not only do my taxes, but find the cure for world hunger. It is at Big Billy FF, the smartest man alive. This is the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast. This is the flagship program. We are powered by the Fantasy Points Media Group. And by God, this is episode 180. Oh my God.
I appreciate the love you just gave me. Me and Jacob were having too much fun.
We were having a conversation in the show sheet. I just realized that I finally won, I think, my first week all year, and I like lost it. And then Billy typed in all caps scoreboard.
Yeah, he won his first weekly picks and immediately tried to ride the wave.
We love this. No, we love it so much. Look, if you're new to this program, boy, do we have a fun one for you today. As always, we're going to do our Not In My League. We are going to do our player picks of the week. We're going to kick things off with the Underdog Pick'ems in a minute because we are presented by Underdog Fantasy. Gotta love that. I want to just shout out everyone on YouTube. You guys have been subscribing like crazy. We're on our way to 230. We're two away. So if you're watching right now or you're listening right now, head over to the Full Tilt Podcast Network over on YouTube and hit that button. We love it. I'm just here to leer. I think you mean lurk. Oh, learn how to clean my bong. Oh yeah, that was a shout out from last week's episode.
Just lurk.
Yeah, I was like lurk. I've been on Twitch too much, guys. This is Twitch lingo's in my brain. Look, we are gonna start. There is news and whatnot. So we're not a show. There's 672,421 people are gonna tell you that losing Cooper Kupp sucks. I think that's already out there. We're all feeling it.
It sucks.
It sucks.
It really sucks.
The worst. I want to ask each of you just one quick question about it before we do the Underdog Pick'ems. That is like the biggest news that I can think of off the top of my head.
Easily.
Yeah. So I just want to ask each of you one quick question about it so we can move on. Jacob, A-Rob, or Skowronek?
Honestly, Skowronek.
That's like, what I think.
I mean, I don't want to just do a white for white situation here.
Yes.
But I do think that he is going to play more of the Cooper Kupp role. They really like what he brings as a blocker. And so much of what Cooper Kupp's role is like playing that sort of inline slot wide receiver position. They get a lot of favorable routes through, I think they call it the F or whatever. I think you're going to see Skowronek take on more of that. And then, you know, Allen Robinson's going to be stuck outside and their entire offensive line is broken. So they just, I don't even honestly know how washed Allen Robinson is versus just that they just don't have the capacity to even attempt any passes to outside wide receivers because they have about 1 second in the pocket before Stafford/Wolford gets enveloped. But yeah, give me Skowronek.
Wolford can never step on the NFL field again. I'd be happy. Billy, A-Rob, or Skowronek?
It is such a beautiful moment. What's the rule? Your takes are never wrong. They're just too early. Skowronek season, baby. Let's go.
Phenomenal. I love
that. Realistically, the hate crime like is super live to be a top six tight end rest of the season.
Oh yeah, hate crime Higbee is well on his way to. We're gonna get a cease and desist on that one day. Like someone's just gonna show him, and we're gonna get an outright cease and desist. And good thing we got a lawyer on staff. He can guide us through that.
I've never realized this. Ben Skowronek is a big dude.
Yeah, yeah. It's annoying.
So is Cooper Kupp. Like, Cooper Kupp is bigger than people think.
It's annoying how similar they look on the field. Like, it's actually very annoying when they were both out there. All right, guys, we have Underdog Pick'em. Look, if you're new to Underdog Fantasy, they have a wonderful game called Pick'em. You pick a couple of players for each week. You tally them up. You get them all right. Double, triple, five times, whatever you want to do with your money. And guess what? If you use promo code FULLTILT, FULLTILT, your first deposit is going to get matched up to $100. That is a ton of free money. When you get into best ball season, where you really see Jacob just take on life and just go full head of steam into best ball season, where he never shuts up about it, even on this here Dynasty program, you're going to want to be in on it, and you can do that at Underdog Fantasy.
And they're about to launch playoff best ball. That's as fun as it gets. I'm pumped to talk about playoff best ball.
You are going to want to get in on it, because it's going to be on this program, even if I don't want to hear it. But each week, we make our pick and plays. And guess what? You can pick
it
and
play. Silence me!
You can pick and play along with us. Last week, not so great. 0 for 3 last week was a phenomenal week. Before
Terrace Marshall was correct.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, that was correct. And both of us picked him. So
I technically lost my streak last week. I think I was going like 5 weeks strong. I'm taking that as a victory because I had to come up with it.
Phenomenal.
In 5 seconds.
My point is the week before last week, we crushed it and we hit every single one of them. So look, when you play with us, with our picks, you win with us and you lose with us together. And we can do that as a community. We can tilt together. Look, each week we each pick one. My underdog pick 'em this week, it's going to be Josh Jacobs. I'm taking the under on 107.5 total yards versus the Broncos. Is not a good matchup for him.
That's a Raiders, huge line.
The Raiders just lost to a Jeff Saturday-led Indianapolis Colts team.
Yikes, Raiders.
Phenomenal, but the team is completely breaking down. I will take Josh Jacobs under 107.5 total yards versus quite possibly the best defense in the NFL right now.
Probably the best defense in the last, like, 5 years. Like,
it's phenomenal.
They are insane, Russ.
Come on, man.
Yeah, dude, unbelievable.
It is insane to think how much they would be legitimately deep playoff contenders if they had, like, Geno Smith. All right, so my underdog pick 'em, real easy. He's playing Atlanta this week. You got to stay in the fire. NBA Jam rules. I'm taking Fields over 250 total, or 254 and a half total yards.
You'll have that rushing.
Yeah. I mean, Fields easily could have 100 yards rushing. Atlanta looks horrible against the run. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. And passing-wise, Atlanta is probably not going to be that good against the pass either. Yeah. So I think 254 and a half is an easy line for Fields.
All right. Woof, 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 woof. We're not quite at D-Hember yet, but we're getting closer and closer. I'll be taking the big dog, the large canine, the grand chien on Thursday night. He gets the Green Bay Packers. Billy knows better than anybody. The Green Bay Packers have never particularly assigned resources to run stopping.
No, it's annoying.
Or wide receivers.
So he gets a Green Bay defense that was just gashed to the tune of over 100 yards by puny, fragile, 30-snap maximum Tony Pollard. So just imagine what a real running back can do. I expect Derrick Henry to get over 100 yards in this game. His prop is at 99.5. Night game, cold. Green Bay, let's get this done.
Yeah, I love that. So we have Josh Jacobs under 107.5 total yards. We have the over for Justin Fields at 254.5 total yards. And we have Derrick Henry hitting the century mark at 99.5 rushing yards. Make those plays. Play with us. We can tilt together. We can talk and cry about it together. Look, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to do Not In My League, formerly known as Jacob's Waiver Wire Game, because we're creative over here. Sit tight. Here's a clip from last week's show.
I think mine is really dumb.
Now we love it.
You're taking us in very different directions. I look forward to a third different direction here.
I'm not going to be able to get through this, and this is going to derail the show. I think all of these
derailed?
Guys...
When was it railed?
I think all three of these players are washed like a hamburger that was cooked in the dryer.
That's good. I love that.
So, all right. I think I derailed Tom a little bit too much on that. So my argument with
it's my favorite analogy I've heard in my entire life, and it is absolutely worth going back and listening to the last episode.
I do want to shout this out. I didn't say this last week. If someone can find where I heard that for the first time, I would be so happy to give them credit. Because I know I didn't come up with that, and I would love to give credit to whoever came up with that, because one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
It's so good. Like, it was, it's honest to God, one of the best analogies I've ever heard. It was phenomenal. The whole episode was great. We even got a Steve Nash reference. We've got a barn cleaning reference. It's just absolutely phenomenal. Top tier content, like you'd expect here at Full Tilt. Look, we have our game here. We are going to play Not in My League. Look, if you're new to the show, if you're new to the program, we understand that your league is full of nothing but sharps. We understand that you have the best leagues on the planet, and there is no way at all that these players are on your waiver wire because you already roster them. We get it. This is not for your league, where we all nominate a player every week that is under 50% rostered on Yahoo in leagues that aren't yours. And we pick blind bids on these players. We roster them. And then Jacob tallies our points over, what is it, wins over?
It's points over replacement. There so it is. Quarterbacks, points over QB12.
We've all
tight ends over tight end 12, running backs, wide receivers over running back, wide receiver 24.
Yeah, and we're all fucked because Bailey's laughing right now. Yeah, however,
I would love nothing more than to hear the scoreboard.
All right, who are the players we have? List the three.
Yeah,
players
so
we
currently,
have.
Currently, first I was just gonna say the current teams. So the current teams are: I have Garrett Wilson, Jalen Warren, Kenneth Walker. Tom has Rashad White. He has the Gus Bus. He has George Pickens. Billy has Khalil Herbert, Isaiah Pacheco, and the only player who legitimately matters in this game, I guess, is Justin Fields.
Bullshit.
Justin Fields. So Billy is quite easily in first place, such that I didn't even tabulate the scores this week. He's easily in first place. I am in second place, basically because of Kenneth Walker. And Tom's in third place because he does not have Justin Fields or Kenneth Walker. So that's essentially the way that this game has gone thus far.
Also,
if you have Fields, you're doing really well. If you have Walker, you're doing pretty well. And if you don't have Fields or Walker, you're doing not as well.
I don't know how I am so good at the games on this show, and I am so bad at fantasy football.
Pish posh. You'll get no pity from me.
The players this week there's only two players this week. The reason for that is because Billy decided to actively try and cheat, and he nominated someone who was already on his team. And for that, I deleted all of his points. So Billy's actually now in third place. He no longer has any points.
Yes.
That's fine. After Fields again, I'll be back up at first place next week.
All right. So we have
For real, the actual assets were Pacheco, who is already on Billy's team, so not nominated.
I would have put money down that I dropped him.
We have Christian Watson, and we have Treston Ebner.
Yeah.
For people that are not aware, Billy has $13 remaining. I have $17 remaining, and Tom has $0 remaining, which means that Tom has the right to make bids, but he can't actually bid on them. So he's at the
Rashad
mercy
White's
going
to carry me. Rashad White's carrying me to this title.
And we can make bids. So shall we?
The winner of the Christian Watson sweepstakes this week is
nobody bid on Christian Watson.
Does that mean I get
Tom,
Christian Watson?
Tom,
if you want Christian Watson, you have to send me who you want ahead of time. You have to be like, I want.
They're
this
just
guy.
All zero bids. Like that's how I'm playing this game now.
No, I
will take any player. I will
him,
yeet.
Who do you want to draw?
I will yeet Pickens into the sun.
Okay, you can have Christian Watson.
There we go.
For the record, I'm honestly pretty pumped about Christian Watson. I've heard that Najee's dealing with knee soreness. Warren seems like a safer bet to rack up points if he's going to miss. And I like Wilson more than Watson, but I like the Watson call.
I need something.
I like it. Okay.
All right. Ebner. I'd be shocked if anyone bid on him, but
nobody bid,
and I don't want him. All right. So
Billy, you may as well take him. I mean, Khalil Herbert's on IR. you don't want the new Khalil Herbert for the rest of the
year? Yeah. Let's party. Let's party.
All right.
There you go.
Treston Ebner, baby.
We're completely organized for this week's game, and we fully understand what was happening, as you can quite clearly tell. So the additions are Christian Watson for George Pickens, and then, of course, we have Ebner for Mr. Khalil Herbert. Also, pour one out for our man, Jacob Sanderson, who loses Khalil Herbert. Just absolutely. Oh, we already did. We got it already, baby. Yeah,
come on, Derek. Billy, just add. Did you just tune
in? Hey, it's fine. Derek's a busy man.
I know.
He's a busy man,
bro. But yeah, Khalil Herbert, one of my favorite players, one of my favorite running backs, one of my favorite stances. Yeah, I mean, I was looking through all of my best ball teams that are advancing. I think Khalil Herbert's on like half of them. Definitely a serious blow. I hope that what he showed this year gives him an opportunity to just continue building on that next year, but we'll see.
Yep, absolutely. We got it covered there for you, Derek. Rigged, we'll answer your question as soon as we get back. I want to play a clip from last week's show, and when we come back, we are going to talk about the meat, the real meat, the main course of the episode this week, which is dynasty trading at the deadline. Sit tight.
Yeah, the difficulty with Taylor is, I mean, 90% of his ability comes from being this significant workhorse back. If all of a sudden he comes back and he's not getting 22 carries a game, he's getting 14, 15, like, it just cuts his value down significantly.
Right. It would be insane to give him more than that. I mean, like, as a person who rosters Jonathan Taylor in Dynasty, I hope they give him 30 carries a game and ride him. But as a person who roots for the Colts and roots for Jonathan Taylor, that would be organizational malpractice. Yeah. I mean, there's no fun. You're gonna give him 25 carries, but you're 3-7. It's insane. Malpractice. We did it, baby. Run the damn ball. We don't give a shit.
Are you changing your handle back? Like, is this going to be a quick switch?
I mean, honestly, I'm shocked that Taylor looked as incredible as he did off of two ankle sprains. I mean, Matt Ryan coming back is massive for his rest season value, versus Sam Ehlinger. Like, they'll actually run a real offense now. I don't think they should be doing this, but it's really fun.
It was incredible. Rigged, we're going to answer some of your questions here before we get going.
Sure.
First Q, which team is hitting the home run this coming Thursday's tilt, Green Bay or Titans? Well, I think it's Derrick Henry. He is what he is. He's an absolute monster. Dobbins, is he rostered in your three gentlemen's league? Oh, absolutely. His name is Brad Henderson, and he loves everyone from Ohio State, and it doesn't matter the cost. He was going to draft them.
Which, I mean, to be fair, is a fair strategy.
Yeah, 100%. He was a bell cow to all LDDM routes. Yeah, he was back to being himself. Like, it was incredible. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Here's a question. Were any of you able to acquire Jonathan Taylor in his downturn for less than his two first price? That's what I'm interested in. Like, Jacob, it's not something that you have a vendetta against every running back on the planet ever. When it comes to acquiring them, which I actually respect, I respect your hatred for acquiring running backs at anything other than dirt cheap. It's a true blessing to be able to watch. Billy, were you able to acquire Jonathan Taylor in his like 2-week downturn?
No, and I wasn't. I wasn't actively trying to.
I tried to acquire Jonathan Taylor from Billy today, and I got outright rejected, not even countered. So there's that for you. That's
sent me one first and
2 seconds.
All right.
You didn't even counter, Billy. That's the point.
Tom gets his bees in a bonnet when you reject without countering.
Here's the thing, because we're going to talk about trading at this point of the show, and I feel like it is important. God. All right. If you reject a trade outright, you are, in my eyes, not allowed to bitch that somebody else accepts a trade that you would have made for that price, Jacob. Anyway, Jacob, we're going to talk about selling depreciating assets. You gave us a Google Docs from the Bulletproof Discord that you wrote out, and it looked like a dossier to me. This is an insane amount of detail that you go into, and it is worth everyone going to the Bulletproof Discord and checking out. It is phenomenal. But what I would like you to do is please give us an intro to your breakdown for making trades for trading away depreciating assets at the deadline.
Yeah. So I tried to write, you know, every now and again, I try to do like a macro strategy thread, and this one's a little long, so I'm not going to say everything that's in it on the show. essentially what I tried to do is break down, like, what are the different motivations for making a trade? What are the different types of positions you're in when you're a seller, right? It's one of those motivations. And then what are the different types of assets that we're looking to sell? And ultimately, I really narrowed down most of the posts on you're one of three types of sellers, right? And this is my opinion. You can have different opinions. I'm trying to come up with some sort of classification. And what I decided is there's essentially three types of sellers. There is your motivated seller. There's your persuadable seller and your agnostic seller. Okay. What a persuadable seller is essentially you're kind of on the fence, right? Either you have a really sick team, but you have some pieces you don't need that you're willing to sell, but you're not knocking down doors. Maybe you're like hovering on the sixth seed. You're like, yeah, I don't really think I can win, but I'm not just going to sell off guys for free. Like, I'm still going to make the playoffs, you know, or then you have your agnostic sellers. These are usually people who don't have their own first round pick, right? You'll see this in dynasty leagues where people aren't going to make the playoffs, but they're like, I don't have my first. So I don't really have any benefit to tanking. So I'm not going to sell guys cheap because what's the point? And then you also have your motivated sellers, right? These are the guys, these are the true tankers. This is, you have your first, you've given up on the idea of contending this year, and you want to get points off your roster, not just because you want to try and make good deals, but because you want to improve your pick. You want points off of your roster onto other people's rosters so that they score more points than you, so that you can get a Bijan Robinson or a Bryce Young or a CJ Stroud or whatever. And then I kind of went through, like, here's how I would approach selling core assets, right? These are guys that I don't expect to depreciate in value inherently, right? Stuff has to happen to them. They have to underperform. Their situation has to get worse. They have to get hurt. Normal good players. We're talking the AJ Browns. We're talking, you know,
Cooper Kupp.
Well, he's a little older, right? I'm talking about younger guys.
Still a prime asset, yo.
Well, no, I would call Cooper. I would put Cooper Kupp in the depreciating category because that's a guy where he's going to go down in value. Like, Cooper Kupp got hurt, but let's even say Devontae Adams then. Like, they're the same age. That's a guy who's going to go down in value next offseason, even if he performs as we think. Even if we don't think he's going to perform worse next offseason, he's going to go down in value because his value right now is comprised of his expected years remaining and his production in those. And when you use one of those up, that's a portion of his value out the window, right? So he's going to just slide a little bit. Now, the fear, of course, is when you do see those depreciating type assets like a Cooper Kupp, when they do get hurt, it's like panic, right?
Yes.
I mean, realistically, right? Here's what I would say in terms of our certain guys, like Derek brings up Stephon Diggs. Here's what I would say. If you're wondering if Stephon Diggs is a depreciating asset or not, right? Think about it this way. How much less can you sell Cooper Kupp for today than you could have a week ago? Because that's the hit of what this year provides for Cooper Kupp, right? Now, a portion of his expected years remaining is gone, right? Now we're looking at his 2023 offseason startup price, Cooper Kupp, not his current year startup price. And so that to me is factoring in that depreciation. Now, I talked about a lot of different scenarios. I don't want to blabber on a ton. So you go in.
So part of the thing, like, I understand what you're saying in that he's going to go down between now and the start of startup season, especially in draft season. But I guarantee, and I'll say, he's going to creep right the hell back up again. This is why it's I actually think that I'd be willing to buy as soon as he starts dipping, because I want to buy these players even on teams that I'm quote unquote retooling, because by the time, let's say, training camp comes out, or he starts running routes again, and Cooper and Matthew Stafford's arm is healed, and you're going to see all these narratives. They went back out for brunch again. All this shit is going to come back up, and his ADP, his value, is just going to re-rise. So at some point, wouldn't you want to buy some of these players at these dips and not just completely yeet all? Like, is there not a scenario where keeping them is just as beneficial?
Well, I would never want to keep these people. So this is essentially the way I would view it, is it depends on what scenario you're in, right? So the way I would always try and – I try to look at these values in components, right? What component of this player's value is what's expected the rest of the year, and can that benefit me, right? So I kind of reduce this almost to a formula when you're looking at selling a player. Once you've determined that a player is not going to have value for you the rest of the season in that you are not competing. So whatever they do rest of the season points-wise isn't going to help you. And to me, a lot of people are saying, well, would you sell guys below their market value? And I think when people say market value, what they usually mean is what I call the macro market value, right? So to me, a macro market value is like what we think guys are worth generally. You know, we're never all going to agree on that. But whatever we fold into that, be that trade calcs, be that actual trades that have been demonstrated in leagues, be that just general rankings, be that, you know, what you talk back and forth with your buddies, all that stuff that you think this is generally what this player is sold for, right? You just said it with Jonathan Taylor. You're like, at his two first price, right? There's some sort of agreed upon principle, but that's the price of Jonathan Taylor. Then there's the micro market value. And with that, by that, I mean, basically what you can get in your league, the best available offer that you can get in your inbox in your league that might be higher, might be lower, right? And then the other aspect is what I would call is projected macro market value, which is his off season, right? What is this going to be this off season that's different from now? And so to me, the really what people should look at this point in time, when you get to the deadline, is the current micro market value, what you can get in your league versus the projected next off season macro market value, plus or minus essentially any use that you can get out of them right now. If you are in that zone where maybe you could still use them, maybe you're still fighting for the secret, and then minus any harm that they could do to you by hurting your pick, basically. And so depending on which position you're in is sort of how far above or below the macro market value I'd be willing to take, right? If I'm in the totally neutral position, I can't make playoffs, but I don't have my first round pick, then, you know, what I want to do is try to get at least something above, something close to that macro market value, right? So anything above what I think they'll be worth next offseason, anything above what they'll be worth next offseason, whether or not that's what they're currently worth now, needs to be above what they're going to be worth next offseason. If you're telling me I'm in the position where I could kind of go either way, I could still compete, then I want to make sure that I'm getting above what they're going to be worth next offseason. I want to be getting that macro market value regardless, current macro market value. And then if I'm in the spot where I just want to get points out of my lineup, where there's like an additional benefit to this trade that I'm essentially also trading the 102 for the 101 by getting these points off my lineup, then I just want to take the best available offer that I can get, provided that it's still at least even with where their value is going to be next offseason. So that's where I'd be selling the guys low, so to speak.
Sure. I think it's hard. I think it's hard for most casual fantasy football players, and even less casual. I wouldn't refer to myself as a casual fantasy football player, but even I have a hard time sitting down and going, I just can't move him for that price. Like I can't let him go for that. And I think that a willingness, I think you said this on a show before a couple weeks ago, where you said like your willingness to just lose out on a deal to get the deal done. I think if more people were willing to do that, I think more deals would get done. And I think that kind of applies to this. Derek here in the chat, Derek Brown, I always think a year from now, will these players be ranked higher in Dynasty or not? If my best hope is that they hold their value, it's time to possibly get out on less title run time.
So I'll use an example of real players so that I stop using econ jargon for people that are really bored. So basically the trade that spurred this whole thing was – in one league, which is filled mostly with Twitter analysts, where people just don't want to buy depreciating old dudes. Like, there's no interest in doing it. It's like pulling teeth. I traded Cordarrelle Patterson and James Conner for a 23 second and a 23 third, I think. Might be a 24 third. Anyway, a 23 second that looks right on the edge. Like, the guy's currently seventh place. Might make playoffs. He might miss playoffs. And a third of some kind.
It's a mid-tier. Right.
And that was one where some people in the script were like, man, it seems like you kind of sold low. And I was like, yeah, I feel like I kind of did, in the sense that, like, in general, I would hope to get a two for Connor and a two for Patterson. And so I feel like I was probably a little maybe like 20% low, 15% low. The way I looked at it is, in that league, I'm certainly not making the playoffs. Like, I'm currently in second last. I'm also 25 points out of last. Where I want to be, because I very much have my first. I have a couple others. I want to get Bijan. So I'm looking at that extra benefit where it's like, I don't want to be waiting around having James Conner's 24 points in my lineup screwing me out of something. So there I'm even more motivated. And where I really broke it down, I was like, I don't know. Maybe people disagree. Do I think that I'm going to be able to get a second and a third for James Conner, who will be 28, Cordarrelle Patterson, who will be 32 in the offseason? I'm not convinced that I'll even be able to get that. In terms of worst case scenario, do I think I could buy them back or similar assets to them back next offseason with those picks? I think that I could, like in terms of how ambiguous those guys are going to be perceived in the offseason. And so I want people to look at not just like the current moment, look at next offseason. What can I do with these picks? Can you buy those guys back? Can you buy other similar guys back? How can you use these picks in deal? Because ultimately, if you're not using these guys, like it doesn't really matter if Cooper Kupp is still going to be good next year or Stephon Diggs is still going to be good next year. You can go and buy these guys back, you know, if you don't think that it's going to be more expensive to buy these guys back or similar guys with the assets that you've taken in. So I think that's a big thing that I've always preached is like, don't worry about what your lineup looks like next year. Just collect assets, liquidate, and then readdress next year. And that's where it came from, that example. Billy, what are your thoughts on like how you look at when and who to sell? Like, are there?
Yeah, my biggest deal is I don't want to go into economics jargon, just purely like talking about value. I'm not gonna come at this from as intellectual of a way as Jacob just did. I always say the
bold way choice for the smartest man on the planet.
I appreciate that. I didn't hear you say it earlier because me and Jacob were arguing in the show sheet. I always come from the sense of I always play Dynasty in a 2-3 year window. Like if I'm not in a situation like right now, there's a lot of quarterbacks that are in like their early 30s, like in between the age of like 31 to 33 or 34. I view those quarterbacks the same way I view a 26-year-old quarterback, because so long as they're producing well enough and there's no real sign of like lingering injury, I'm not terribly worried about those guys because I'm not drafting these quarterbacks to sit on my roster for 10 years. I'm drafting them to help me like adjust these future draft picks I'm going to have. Yeah. So looking at players like Kenny Pickett, I think Kenny Pickett is a player that still has a lot of very good upside, especially as that team kind of develops and starts getting back to the Steelers of old. But I think there's a very good opportunity there where Kenny Pickett is also just this middling guy moving forward. I'd be so happy to look at these guys who are building younger and move up some of these younger assets for, I mean, he's doing horrible right now, but he's the first one that comes to my mind, Russell Wilson. Because as much as Russell Wilson may be having a rough season, he's still the quarterback there for the next 3 years. And if he's not, he's going to be the quarterback somewhere. They can't do anything with his contract. But the contrast to this comes with a lot of these other kind of older players, like wide receivers that are getting up at like 29, running backs who are in like their mid-20s, 26, 27. The number one thing you do not want to do in fantasy is hold the bag. Like this is the biggest thing, because we can sit here and move pieces up and down. We can barter, we can trade players, but the number one thing that if there is a single fact that I think makes you the best dynasty fantasy football player you could be, it's selling these assets before they go off the cliff. Sure. Like think about right now, if you have a player like Julio Jones, I know he went off the cliff a couple of years ago, but if you were to have Julio Jones
come back, Julio,
like that level of a cliff that he went off is so unbelievably drastic. So if you were a player in, say, 2018, 2019, who were sitting on him, and it was so easy to just toss it out the window and move on, like, of course you'd want to. But the problem is, as soon as that glass shatters, and all of a sudden it's shown that Julio is not the same guy, or maybe Henry was injury prone. This was something we saw last offseason, or his body's deteriorating. Like, as soon as that shatters, all of a sudden there's nothing you can do. Like, either you ride it out and hope everyone is wrong, which it worked out for Henry, did not work out for Julio, or you end up just sitting there and being like, well, this guy's on my team till he retires, and all that value that you just lost, not just in, like, having a bad player on your team, but having just a bench spot you could have spent on a fourth round pick that maybe develops into something special, is just all lost. Like, I think there's a lot to look at in terms of valuation and how it rises and falls. I think one of the, like, before you do anything, the best thing you can do for yourself is learn how to identify when a lot of these assets are kind of just going out the window. So
I think my slight cap to that is, like, I mean, look, I'll be the first person to say, like, of every aspect of fantasy football, absolute worst thing that like you should rely on me for, of all the different aspects for, is like picking players. Like, I don't feel as though I have any like added benefit of it. I tend to go off of people from data and film world that I trust, that are better at it than me, that make that a larger focus of it than me. My goal is to try and be profitable, essentially, with like essentially just being batting 50-50 on player evaluation. Like, I want to derive edge elsewhere. And so I think, to me, like, if I had the crystal ball, you know, if anyone had the crystal ball to see which players are going to fall off the cliff when, I mean, I'd be a millionaire. Right. I think that
that's the ticket.
And I think it's really difficult. And I think a lot of it isn't even skill based. Like, a lot of it's just injury based, right? Like, which, like, Michael Thomas was churning along as the wide receiver one overall, and then his, like, he got like this ridiculous high ankle sprain, and then another one, and then he just like never got right again, right? Like,
yeah, that's...
I don't think, right? So what I would say is, like, could anybody have predicted at the time that Michael Thomas first got injured, the very first time, that he was just going to dissolve into dust? Like, you would have been a madman to predict that. But what I would say is, like, if you were not competing that year and you were holding Michael Thomas because you were like, well, he's still going to be good for several more years, he's only 27 years old, and you were taking that risk on your team rather than having other people take the risk, and you're just holding a bunch of picks that you can use that are liquid, then to me, that is on you, because that can happen at any given time. Like, you can get those guys that are still going to be good next year by just trading in those picks that are risk-free later after paying the hold tax on those things. That's what I stress.
So I just want to point out, we got a couple of things. I want to answer this question for sure. Rigged, we love you. You post a lot. We're going to try to get to them. If losing a trade will win you friendship, would that make you want to lose in all your trades? I'll tell you this. Absolutely fucking not. Jacob and I consider you one of my closest friends that I have. And I want to beat you in every single trade I have, because I want to beat you in every single league I have. So politely go fuck yourself, sir.
The only time that like winning a trade should lose you a friendship is if it's like someone has like an outstanding trade in your inbox, and then the guy like twists his ankle and you're like, accept. Like, if you're an asshole, then sure. But like, if you just whip the dude's ass on a trade, like, good for you.
Yeah.
You didn't hold a gun to his head.
100%. I want to ask this, because I've heard both of your guys' kind of philosophies on holding and buying, and when to and when not to, and risk tolerance, which is like my favorite term to kind of generalize everything. It's very easy for talking heads and people on Twitter and an article to say, you should buy this player. You should all be looking to sell this player. I hope you sold player X while you could. It's easy to say it. I feel like it's way harder to execute than people want to talk about. It's one of those things. Josh Jacobs is having a phenomenal season. If you have Josh Jacobs, or you bought like round 7 Josh Jacobs dip this offseason, like, phenomenal. It's worked out for you. It's great. Everyone in the world knows that you're trying to trade him. And everyone in the world knows you're trying to trade him for what Josh Jacobs is right now. I feel it's the same reason what you just mentioned also, Billy, is the same reason why nobody wants to buy Mike Evans. Nobody has wanted to go out and buy Mike Evans for what people actually want to get for him. So how do you approach, is what my question is, because I feel like this is the most important part of trading, is the human element. How do you actively trade away players, aside from finding that one person that just wants to do it, which sounds easier than it is. But players that everyone knows you're trying to get rid of. Like, everyone knows you're trying to get rid of James Conner. Everyone knows you're trying to get rid of Darren Waller. You know, players like that. These are the players that everyone in the Dynasty Twitter sphere will tell you that you should be going to trade. But everyone's already, they know, bro. Like, when a player has a blow-up week and you put that player on the block, everyone in that league rolls their eyes and goes, we fucking get it. How do you approach the human element of that task? And I'll start with you, Jacob.
So I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head first when you said the human element of it. Yeah, I think that there's like, I don't know, it's like Maslow's hierarchy. Oh, yeah.
Also, like I also want to point this out. One of the biggest fallacies is supposed to be the ease of trading quarterbacks at Superflex. Good right. luck. It's trading
very
four.
Hard to trade four and very, very hard to trade them away sometimes too when you have the ones that nobody wants. Like,
and
there's plenty
and
of times I'm just sitting on Tannehill with like a for sale sign that nobody.
Right. And like it's impossible to sell them for what they're worth. As soon as the draft is over, it's just color it impossible. Hopefully what you have is what you have.
Yeah, so I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head when you talk about the human element, right? So there's like tiers of like trading approach. I mean, I'm certainly not a czar of trading. I will say this. I definitely get more trades done than most people. Like, if you were to look at leagues, like, I guarantee you that I would be in the top two or three of like most trades done in like probably 90% of my leagues. So I must be doing something. Whether they're all good trades, they're certainly not. But I do accomplish getting them done at a decent rate. I think one thing is, yeah, you have to keep in mind that there should be not that much of a difference between what you would actually buy for in the other person's position and your sell price, right? One of the biggest issues is, like, I call it the flex player endowment effect, where basically there's like a given time where there's like an obvious short-term buy that opens up, and I'll notice that in like 20 leagues, I'll try and buy that player for, say, a late second. And then another 20 leagues, I probably haven't been 20 leagues, 10 leagues that I have that player, I'll try and sell that player for a late second. And it's like all of my sells get denied and all my buys get denied. And it's like, well, what's wrong with humanity? Like, why, you know, why is it that people are not willing to take what they aren't willing to pay?
Perfect example is your Melvin Gordon conspiracy theory. Like, yeah.
Nobody wanted to sell for late two. Nobody wanted to buy for late two.
Right. As soon as Javonte went down, you went on this tangent about not being able to get this deal done. And it was infuriating. It's hard to beat the obvious, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I think that that's like, first of all, it's not always on the buyer. Sometimes it's on the seller. Like, a lot of sellers are just asking for too much, right? Like, what I would say is, like, I'm very willing to sell at the price that I would actually buy for when I'm in the position of that motivated or agnostic seller. So that's number one. In terms of actually finding buyers, you know, just putting a guy on the trade block, almost never going to do anything, right? Like, almost never going to do anything. In terms, you know, the next step is like firing offers out indiscriminately, almost never going to do anything. Like, third step, look at the team's record, look at their roster, try to find needs. Fourth step, actually reach out with a message to that person. Hey, I'm looking to unload some guys. Could you have use for X? And what are you willing to part with, right? Maybe you still get nothing. You usually at least get more with each of those steps. It's hard when you're in a ton of leagues, but like, that's usually what I try, at least, is because I'm in tons of leagues. And look, if I was in one or two leagues, I would do every single one of these all the way through that fourth step, where you're just messaging people and talking to them individually. Hopefully, if you're in that spot, you can. What I try to do usually is, like, I try to at least get to the third step, where I'm sending targeted offers that make sense based on the person's need, based on their record. I'm not sending Mike Evans out to some 2-8 team asking for a first round pick like a lunatic, right? And then if those all get rejected, that's when I try and start actually reaching out, having conversations, seeing if I can get anything done. You know, it's not often that I actually have to carry depreciating assets past the trade deadline. Like, I'm usually motivated enough to sell, willing to take enough. And I think the nice thing that's like that helps you sleep at night is, like, really try and think about, what do I think that this player would cost me to buy this caliber of player in the offseason? Can I get more than that? And eventually drop your ask to just a little bit more than that. And if you can't get that, well, then whatever. That player, I guess, in your micro market, your league, I guess he's a buy. right? It sucks because you'd rather sell at the macro market, but you can't always. And that's kind of how I go to sleep at night. It's like, I'm going to make sure that I leave it all in the field, so to speak. And right. If it can't happen, then it can't happen.
I think that's important. Is again, it kind of comes back to that same statement where I feel like the way I personally view it is there's two ways you can go. You can either put it all on the line and trade for your guy. I have said, even when this show was still the Friday Night Lights podcast, right? When we just potted to our league, I always pounded the table for, if you feel like that is your guy, you go and get that guy so you can feel good about it and kind of say, fuck the price for the most part, because that's still part of what this is for. This offseason, it was Christian Kirk for me. I wanted him everywhere I can get him. I put my money down. I put my money where my mouth was, and it's worked out. However, that's also failed me at the same time, but I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to lose in that scenario for that reason. And I feel like that's the same thing you're talking about when selling these depreciating assets, where at the end of the day, as long as you are just comfortable that you have turned it into an asset that can appreciate, maybe you can sleep at night. It has to come down to your willingness to just go ahead and do it. And at some point, you have to not be as concerned about, quote unquote, losing out on the micro market, which
your takes are usually right so long as you wait long enough.
Yeah, exactly. We have a question from Cody Johnson. Shout out to Cody on YouTube. Hopefully you're hitting the subscribe button. We appreciate you. Hit that notification bell. On a playoff team, would you trade a late first for Najee in Dynasty 12-man PPR? I would not now because I don't think you have to, personally.
I mean, if that's the price and they're like, no, I'm not going to go lower, yes. Like, I completely fine with that. Like,
sure. You're right. In that scenario, sure.
I'm a playoff team. Would I trade? No, there's nothing on this planet that would compel me to trade a first for Najee Harris.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it, which is funny because I hate Najee the most.
I will say I've acquired Najee
Harris. I know you are a great human being. I am so sorry. I'm so mean to you.
I mean, I would just run down the list of other running backs. Like, okay, honestly,
go ahead, run the list down.
Like, I don't know, name any running back. I'd probably rather trade a late first for them than Najee. But I
Tristan Ebner.
Yeah. Ultimately, like, if the choice was don't. Like, just don't make an addition at running back and start Jerick McKinnon at RB2 or trade a first for Najee Harris. I'm taking Jerick McKinnon at RB2.
Right. That's a good way to look at it. I will say that I acquired my first share of Najee Harris since I drafted him in one league at 103. And I traded DJ Moore and Daryl Henderson for him because I have entirely too much. I have a 50% roster shit of DJ Moore. I just got to yeet it. It was with our own Tom Lee. So shout out to him for trying to whittle down his Najee. I'll say this to you. I don't think you should do it, Cody, but again, I'm a firm believer. And if you really think that that's your golden ticket, like his value will never be lower.
I just think there's gotta be some manager in your league that has a depreciating running back that's willing to sell for a late first.
Guys, we can always do these questions like this.
I understand. I understand, but it's important. So Billy said yes. Jacob, you have said absolutely, undoubtedly no. And I'm telling you to, if you're going to be happy with it at the end of the day, go for it. But I advise against it. That's three different answers, Billy. What are you out here talking about? Jesus.
No, I'm more saying, like, every single question that gets asked, we can go, oh, well, I wouldn't do that. I'd go find a different, like, it's just not the question. No, I get
it. Well, but it is the question, though. Like, I think that's the problem. Yeah. Like, people get stuck in these, like, binary spots. And I think it is the question. I mean, people should put,
like maximize it. Do I think Najee's value to a dynasty team that is in the playoffs is a late first?
I would pay less to whoever has Jeff Wilson Jr. I would pay less for Devin Singletary. I would pay less for Aaron Jones. I would pay, like, there's a couple of running backs that I would rather have that I don't feel like you have, but if the reason for this trade is not just because you're a contender, but it's because you really think that this is the lowest he's going to get, you know, like, if that's what you really believe, then sure. But I just, again, I'd A, don't think you have to, and B, don't think you should. Let's get some final thoughts on the trade topic to round it out before we get out of here.
I think I've thought it out. Last thing I guess I'll just say would be like, be active, try, right? Really try. And try does not mean putting them on the trade block. Try means talking to human beings.
Yes. Do not just put it on the
trade block. And, you know, ultimately, like, be open-minded come trade deadline. Unless you have a buy clinched, be open-minded to going in a number of different directions with your team based on what your own league dictates, right? Like, don't leave anybody off the table. Don't leave any direction off the table. And the one thing I would say too, especially for teams that just lost Cooper Kupp and you know, had a plan to contend, is like, some teams, I said this after Lance got hurt. I said, some teams learn that they lost a championship in week 17 and other teams learn in week two. You know, some teams learn they lose a championship in week 17. Other teams learn in week 10, right? If you have Cooper Kupp, maybe not. Like, you might be so loaded up, you might have other value you can replace them. For some teams, that might be the death blow. And that might mean punting a team that you didn't plan to punt. But, you know, you don't want to fall victim to the sunk cost fallacy. So maybe it's time to just try to sell off the depreciating and reboot for next year.
I'm out of thoughts, but here are a bunch of thoughts by our own Jacob Sanderson. Billy?
Yeah. Trading is something that is so, like, malleable and changes in every situation that you're in. I think that's why a lot of times I try to guide it as, this is what I would do, and you need to make your own choice. Like, a lot of what this comes down to is we can come back to principles on what we think is right inherently in dynasty trading. And I think that's really easy to do, but a lot of it's going to come down to what's happening in your league, what's happening with your roster, and what you're ending up looking at. I think the fastest principle you can always count on is try to get assets that are going to appreciate, try not to hold the bag, and you're always going to do better messaging people than just shotgunning trades into the abyss.
Right. If I were to have a final thought, is that trading is very much not a quote-unquote skill like some may have you believe. I think that is very nuanced in how willing you are to be active. Also, if you're the person that doesn't set a trade offer for somebody and you just click the I'm interested in player, I immediately hate you as a person at that moment. I just want, that is the worst way to get, I am interested in Patrick. No shit. That's a little shot at Tom Lee because he did that to me before we went live today. And I want to let him know, I dislike you until I see you on Friday, sir. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We're going to do our player picks. We're going to get you out of here for the rest of the evening. Sit tight. Here's a clip from our Full Tilt Devi recap by one Andy Starr.
We got to start talking about Zay Flowers. He's not a big guy, 5'10", 175 pounds, but he has the versatility to play in the slot, out wide. His yards per route runs above 2 yards. He can make contested catches if he needs to, but he's gotten separation on over 90% of his targets. He has a lot of similar traits to other recent late declares in Chris Olave and Devontae Smith. Now, I'm not trying to compare anything Flowers has done to literally one of the best wide receiver seasons we've ever seen from Devonta Smith, but the traits are there, and I don't believe that Olave and Smith are too outlandish of comps. If he does get that day one draft capital, I would consider him early second round, potentially even a late first, depending on landing spot when dynasty rookie drafts roll around in April.
You can catch Andy Starr and John Arrington on the Full Tilt Devi show on Wednesdays every week. Also, I just want to point out, speaking of Devi, the Volunteers have announced their orange helmets, and
yeah,
these things look
fucking rock,
fucking unreal. These are so sick. I'm loving everything Vols.
I just so hope they make the playoffs.
I mean, I think that they're in good shape.
They need someone
cares
to lose.
I don't actually think that they do. Like, I think that the Clemson loss is good enough. But I mean, I've been getting in fights with people about people that think that Oregon is.
I mean, Clemson did lose and they didn't move into the top five.
Well, they're at five, but Michigan and Ohio State play each other.
That is true.
So my thoughts are is that, like, whoever loses out of Ohio State and Michigan, I think is drawing dead, because then either way, it's. Then Tennessee and the loser of that are both one-loss teams without a championship game. and Tennessee would have better wins than the loser of that game. I mean, people have said Oregon, if they win out, if they win the Pac-12. Tom's going to lose his mind, so we'll all say
that. No. I love it. I love it. But for people who don't know, every week these guys are like, you got to move us along. But yeah, I love the spontaneous conversation, man. It's hard for me to do that. I reference one thing.
We
got to move on to the next thing. And next thing you know, we're having impromptu conversation about Tennessee's playoff opportunity. I love it. But it's just, I always find it amusing when these guys tell me to tell them to hurry the fuck up. I just think it's funny to me. Every week, the boys and I play a little game to determine who's drinking what at the live draft show. I'm pretty sure that's what we've determined it's going to be this year. I'm really hoping to win so I don't have to drink Billy's concoctions. Jacob, you're already committed to drinking whatever one of us tells you because you're terrible at this. But yeah, every week, we pick a quarterback outside of the top 15.
I thought we played outside. Double or nothing last week. You know, now I'm back up top.
No thanks. RB outside of the top 16, wide receiver outside of the top 24. And because the position sucks, our favorite tight end outside of the top 10, PPR format, these are going by the Fantasy Pros, so shout out Fantasy Pros, and your week 11 ranks. Jacob had his best week ever, which we have to give some props to, but he is still in last at 367.06 points. He's getting better. I am sitting in second at 495.4. Thought I was going to get the lead back because Billy didn't have Stafford play, but Jeff Wilson Jr. was the absolute bee's knees of calls. So Billy is sitting in first at 501.08 fantasy points on the
big
season.
Surprise, Billy is winning a game on the show.
Oh, shut up, Billy. Jacob, you are in last, so you get to go first. Hit us with your picks, please.
Yeah, man. All right, we got picks. We're taking Kenny Pickett at quarterback. Honestly, this is like one of the worst weeks for streaming quarterbacks imaginable.
Yeah,
like
this was rough.
I was looking and there was not a single option that I was actually excited about. But I will take Kenny Pickett. I thought he showed some progression this past week. You know, he gets a Cincinnati defense that's good, but it's still more beatable than, frankly, most of the defenses that he's gone up against. He's had a brutal schedule to start his NFL career. And I'm actually kind of excited to see what he does in the week starting after this, when he gets just like a run of really, really bad defenses. So I might be riding with Pickett for a while. Running back, I will take Brian Robinson. They get the absolute nut matchup for running backs with the Houston Texans this week. They just gave him 26 carries on Monday Night Football. I expect them to continue to feed Brian Robinson so long as they're able to control the game. And this will be one of the few times where you can really expect Washington to control the game throughout against the Texans. Wide receiver, I'm crushed that Billy would commit essentially identity theft by taking one of my true brand players this week before I logged into the Google Doc. So I will not take him against my will. I will instead take Donovan Peoples-Jones, who has been over 50 yards in six consecutive games. Not sure if we're going to see David Njoku yet, or if it'll just continue to be the DPJ and Amari show, but they're in a projected shootout this week. So give me DPJ for some opportunities to get downfield. And I'll take Isaiah Likely at tight end. I'm not sure if Andrews is going to play or not, but either way, they don't have any receivers. So I expect that Likely will find his way onto the field a little bit regardless. Don't mind his odds of getting into the end zone.
Yeah, that's not a bad call. And it's also an away game for Cleveland, which means Amari Cooper will be taking a nap somewhere in the stadium and be completely irrelevant. Look, my picks this week, I thought I had an absolute bomb of a week, and then I realized Jerry Jeudy hurt himself. So I also put up a zero, which is why I didn't jump ahead of Billy. So sucks for me, but this week we're getting it back. He's tenacious. He's feisty. And there's no way they're benching him after unseating the undefeated Philadelphia Eagles. My start at quarterback this week is my one true love of waiver wire quarterbacks. It is Tay-Tay Heineke. We do love him on this program. Jacob doesn't, yes, but I do. I am taking Isaiah Pacheco as my running back. He has a bee's knees type matchup, and I just think eventually the touchdowns will come his way. He's got to get one eventually, right? And that's all you're really asking for.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the role CEH was in. He was scoring like two touchdowns a week early in the season.
Exactly. And if you're as excited for Rashad White starting the game and then getting a bunch of carries for a bunch of yards and nothing else, you should be as excited for Isaiah Pacheco, who basically gets to do the same thing every week for the Kansas City Chiefs. So I like that. I'm going to I am stacking like this is a DFS show. I am taking Curtis Samuel to stack with my Tay-Tay. I think Curtis Samuel is one of the big surprises.
We have like three members of the Washington football team this week in the past.
Yeah, we love it. We love it.
Had four. I almost took Gibby.
Well, you didn't. So I'm going to go Curtis Samuel, who's been a surprise. And by God, hey, like Billy said, as long as it doesn't matter if you're early.
All the money in the world.
It doesn't matter if you're early or not, as long as you're right eventually. Foster Moreau had over 10 fantasy points last week, and we love that. The Raiders might suck, but Foster Moreau, he's good. I am counting on it. He is my start of the week at tight end.
Yeah, as soon as I logged into Fantasy Pros, I clicked on tight end, saw Moreau at 11. I was like, yeah, that I'd put all my money in the world on Tom taking him. Starting off this week, I'm taking Jared Goff. For those of you that don't know, the QB for the Detroit Lions going up against the Giants. I think they're going to have to throw the ball. I don't think they're going to be able to rely on Jamal Williams the way they have. So I think it's going to be a very good game for Jared Goff. And as well, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Also, I hate this pick, but I believe in it greatly. I'm taking David Montgomery going up against the Atlanta Falcons. I had this thought this week. I'm like, the Atlanta Falcons feel like they've been really bad against running back. But I feel like I haven't seen that mentioned. So I decided to look up the fantasy finishes of running backs against the Falcons. I apologize, this is going off the rails, but I pulled these stats, so I'm going to use them. Since week four, these are the finishes of fantasy running backs against the Falcons. RB11, RB1, RB4, RB11, RB5, RB4, RB9. So without Khalil Herbert, I'm very excited to be taking David Montgomery. And also, I don't know as though Justin Fields is going to run for 150 yards every week. He could. I don't know as though it's going to happen. I'm also going up. I'm going to take Kadarius Toney versus the Chargers with no Juju.
Boo.
Better rude. Juju.
Identity theft.
Boo, Billy, boo.
Yeah, you took my pick last week. With no Juju, get better Juju. I think Kadarius Toney is going to be in for a lot more targets. And because of that, I think that's going to mean a lot more fantasy points. Because Kadarius Toney seems like a god with the ball in his hand.
He looked
good.
And
against the Chargers, I think there's potential for a shootout. And finally, I'm rolling with the man himself. I kicked him off my thanks, Lucas. I kicked him off my sleeper team this year because of a certain tweet. But Juwan Johnson going up against the Rams. Real excited for him. He's been having a sneaky, really good season. Like, I feel like very few people have really talked about Juwan Johnson, but I feel like every week I have him in my league of record team, and every week I'm like, oh, shit, Juwan Johnson put up 15. Good for him. So real excited for Juwan Johnson. I think that's an easy pick going up against the Rams. And, yeah, I think that's a strong set. I did not like picking picks this week.
Hard week.
Yeah.
I think there's no buys next week, right? It's week 12, the buyless week.
Yeah.
I'm not totally sure, but.
And I think a lot of good teams are on buy. That's like pushing the bad players into
Miami, Tampa, Jacksonville, and Seattle.
New England was last.
Yeah, New England just was. No, it's Miami, which has like several fantasy options. Jacksonville has Etienne and at least a bunch of other Kirk.
Seattle,
shockingly, is like the fantasy gold mine, and Tampa has some good fantasy assets. So,
tough week. Yeah. It definitely feels like that's hurting us a lot this week.
Yeah. Shout out, Dr. Disrespect. Final thoughts before we get out of here, Jacob?
Man, have fun. You know, this is, to me, like in Dynasty, right, whatever happens in your championship weeks is what happens in your championship weeks, right? And I don't know when everybody's trade deadlines are. Some it's this week, some it's next week, some it's they don't even have any. They're just libertarians running around, you know, doing cocaine in the bathroom. but, you know, if it is this week or whatever week it is to cap off our trade deadline edition, just if there's ever a week to really dig in to fantasy football and min-max the hell out of your team, it's this week. You know, this is where you set yourself up for how you're going to perceive of your team moving forward next year. Be honest with your team in terms of your evaluation, be diligent, and try and squeeze the ever living pennies out of any sales you can make or buys you have to make.
Truly brilliant. Billy.
It really is an art when it comes down to dynasty football. Like a lot of it is just learning how to read the this kind of development in players, and that's why we're here, because I feel like that isn't something that's always intuitive. So it's always nice to sit here and chat with some of the guys about what our takes on how to do that is. So really, I got nothing special else to say. It was a good conversation. I mean, I enjoy these kind of talks, so it was great to kind of sit down and talk with them. I hope y'all enjoy it too.
My opinions are pretty open about where I stand on a lot of the trading situations. If you can sit there in your league and everyone else is getting deals done and you always feel like you're somehow left out, the problem is you. You have to
be... Hi, you're the problem. It's you.
Right, correct. Shout out Tay-Tay. We're Swifties over here. I feel like that needs to be openly said. If you can't seem to ever get deals done with anyone, and you are often telling your friends that the people in your league suck because they don't see your value, the problem is you, and it's time to make an adjustment. It's just the cold hard facts. Like we talked about on this program, this episode, and we've talked about on many episodes before that, you must be self-aware and you must be willing to adapt within your league. It's the only way you're going to get ahead. It sucks sometimes, but you can't just log on to www.whateverfantasyvaluetellsmeimright.com and apply it to every one of your leagues. It doesn't work that way. So be a little more self-aware. And I also want to shout out, so this is like a local Winnipeg thing. It super sucks.
Oh, it's absolute bullshit.
Coop Bread is shutting down. They are a local bakery here. They make some of the best bread I've ever had my entire life, and they are shutting their doors. I think it's this week. So I'll be stopping by there and buying whatever I can and even freezing it. It really sucks as a, such a great local brand, but shout out to everyone there. If somehow you ever see it or you're somehow listening, at least two people for sure appreciate. They're literally on my drive home. Like, it really sucks. So shout out to them and everything they do and have done for the great community here in Winnipeg. Other than that, Jacob, I know you have a 3.5 hour long recording that you have to go and get to. Everyone should be subbed to Sweat and Bullets. It is a phenomenal program.
We got a new co-host this week because Drew's off galvanizing in Vegas. It's going to be me and Akash. We're going to talk through, if you liked the discussion about trading and dynasty strategy and stuff, and you were one of the weirdos who was like, oh, you guys cut that off too soon. I want a 2.5 hour version. Buckle in, buddy.
Correct. And again, should be going and subscribing to Sweat and Bullets. It is phenomenal. Content, it, just, you know, 1.25 speed if you want to get through it in like one sitting. However, yeah, I also want to encourage everyone to please go and subscribe over there at Full Tilt Dynasty, the Full Tilt. The Full Tilt Podcast Network over there on YouTube, wherever you're listening. Hit that sub, the notification button. Register Underdog Fantasy with promo code Full Tilt. Go to fantasypoints.com. Subscribe there and get all your information. I am weekly now doing TLDRs for Fantasy Points, turning their articles that are so in-depth with information into readable threads, which you can find over my profile at Thomas Tipple FF. We love every single one of you. Enjoy this week. It's going to be busy. It's going to be crazy. But remember, this is a game, and we love it. Remember, there are people on the other side of those screens while you're sitting there arguing and flinging names all out and about. It will happen. It's going to get feisty. It's trade deadline. But remember, there are people on the other side. Remember that clear eyes, full hearts can never lose. Your best days, well, goddamn, they're always spent tilting. Good night, everybody.